that's the way things go. Let's talk with Janine and Melissa about the... This comes from an article in the Bonner Bee, August 6th, about local baby box blessed second in the state. And Janine is executive director, Life Choices Pregnancy, 7B Care Clinic, and Melissa is nurse manager.
Yes.
We'll turn to Janine, and can you give an umbrella overview of the Safe Haven Baby Box, where the concept came from and what it does?
Sure, yeah. So, and Melissa was looking it up this morning. The first box was 2016. And it's 150 babies have been saved. So we all, in all 50 states, there's the Safe Haven Baby Box, or the Safe Haven Law. So you can hand your baby to a person at EMS station, fire station, hospital, with no ramifications. But the problem is that people aren't going inside. And it was really interesting. Monica Kelsey, who was the founder of Safe Haven, was also abandoned as an infant. And that brought her this passion that she's using for her life. It's her life's work. And she was talking about how in so many cases, the babies are abandoned outside of the hospital, outside of the EMS. And she says, you can see people want to do the right thing, but they won't go inside.
And what was the major reason, Janine, for leaving the baby outside the fire station or the hospital?
Right. They just really, you mean the reason that women would come to that situation?
No. The reason why they would just simply rather than go inside.
Right. I think it's the shame and of just the, what are people going to think? And so the Safe Haven Baby Box allows a woman to anonymously surrender her newborn in a way that's safe and that the baby will be well cared for. So it's just that next step of you don't have to go inside. You don't have to see a person. You can remain anonymous. There's no cameras. They can just walk up and leave their baby.
Okay. And you said that there are baby boxes in every 50 states?
There's Safe Haven laws in every 50 states, but baby boxes in some of the states. It's not legal everywhere. So, for example, in Idaho, this is the second baby box.
First one is?
It's in Blackfoot,
okay.
Idaho.
Okay.
And the reason is it only became legal last July to have a baby box. Mm-hmm. Before that, the law didn't support using a baby box. So you don't see them in Washington, California, Oregon because it's not legal yet. So
what makes it illegal?
I mean, it's just that the law doesn't say you can use a baby box to surrender your baby. Under the Safe Haven law, it just says you can walk up to a person.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So it's just simply the method of surrender doesn't include a baby box in most states,
okay,
or in some states. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the second one in the Pacific Northwest, and I really do feel like people will come from all over in order to be able to use it. And be able.
Someone doesn't have to be just a member of the Bonner County,
yeah,
community.
Right. Mm-hmm. I suspect they'll come from all over,
okay,
hours away in order to be able to, and because they want to do the right thing. They're just in desperate situations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
can you talk a little bit more about its creation here in Sandpoint? What kind of,
yeah,
support you needed? What kind of backing in order?
Right. Yeah. So I saw a movie, I don't know if you guys have seen it, called The Dropbox, and it's about a Korean pastor who put a baby box in the side of his church because people were leaving the babies out in the cold on the church steps.
Ah.
And so that was the first time that I went, wow, what an amazing way to be able to minister to people. And so the second thing that happened was I heard this call, and it was like a call between Monica Kelsey and the woman who had placed a box. And she said, we've got the first baby in the box that you place. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't imagine what that must feel like. And so from there, at that point, I was on the board for Life Choices Pregnancy Center. And I brought it to the board and I said, hey, I'd really like you to think about placing a box here in Sandpoint. And, you know, we went back and forth and they had me do a lot of research and they asked me the statistics, which there are none. But it's like, I just really feel like this is for the one. It is for the baby, you know, that we want to. And if it's only one in the life of the box, it's worth everything,
okay,
that we've gone through. So the donors of Life Choices paid for the box. Oh, so the donors paid for it. And then it just took a lot of red tape. But the really interesting thing was that I'm on the board of the EMS for here in Bonner County, and Jeff Lindsay and I were already in communication. And so when I said to Jeff, "Hey, Jeff, I want to do this thing," he was like, "Absolutely, yes," just like that.
Let's describe the actual, what this mechanism is, I guess. What is it? How does this work?
When you say box, I think of an Amazon Prime.
Right. Or like a bank deposit box.
Yes. Dimensions, in terms of what's there.
So it's climate controlled. It's in the side of the EMS building, the new EMS building on Division at 521 South Division. And you just open the door of it and a silent alarm sounds. The baby is placed. A second alarm calls 911. And then you close the door. But in that time, there's also this bag of information that falls out, and the woman or man is able to pick it up and get information about what their rights are, what happens to the baby next. But at that point, EMS will be alerted and they would go and get the baby and take it to the hospital.
What's the size of the box?
Newborn size.
Okay. And you said an initial alarm goes off and then 911. What's the initial alarm to?
So there's two alarms. So the first one, it's actually to a monitoring center, and then they call 911. So like when you pull the fire alarm at a school, it's the same type of system. So but there's two different alarms, two different calls that are made to 911.
Okay, and the location is?
521 South Main, or South Division.
South Division, is that on the east side or the west side?
The west side.
The west side.
Across from the county building. Right behind Mountain West.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. So it's on the other. I'm thinking of Huckleberry Lanes.
Right.
Oh, okay. The bowling. Oh, so that's too far north.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's just a really cool system. And so when Jeff and I discussed it and he said, yes, there was a ton of red tape, a lot of things.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because the county and the baby box people needed to come to agreement on a contract. And that was the difficulty with indemnification. So it took a lot of work in order to get it worked out. But I was just so grateful that everybody's for it. The support has been fantastic. There isn't anybody that I've heard that thinks it's a bad idea. So it's been a great project.
So a baby is deposited in the baby box, alert to 911, then what?
So then the baby, so EMS would take the baby, or actually anybody. So if the 911 call, let's say EMS was out on a call, then the police would come. So whoever's available would go, and the rate is within 2 minutes, they've made it to the box so far. And we test it every week. They tested it for 7 days straight to make sure it was working. So there was a lot of testing and that type of thing. But from there, the EMS or whoever would take it to the hospital, make sure that it's safe, and then it would end up in the health and welfare system at that point.
You mentioned that it's monitored. Is it like, in what way is it monitored? Is it just a light turns on and off for somebody, or can somebody actually like see or hear what's going on in the baby box?
No, it would just be the alarm.
Just that they can tell the door's been opened.
So I think twice now they've had false alarms with somebody possibly messing with the box. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
But no baby, but the alarm went off. And it works the way that it should. And then the parents have 30 days to come back and say that they want the baby still. But in that time, you know, of course, they'd have to prove that they were the parents, DNA testing, that type of thing. And then also that they're a fit parent and that they made a mistake. But they have 30 days. And then after that, parental rights are terminated, which is important to me because I didn't want the baby to go from one bad situation to another. It was important to me that it was a quick transition into adoption, because normally through the foster care system, it would be, I think, a year before the baby would be released from parental and then placed into a loving, you know, their permanent home.
Is there any age range on the baby, like a year,
year and a half? Less than 30 days.
Oh, less than 30 days.
Yeah, I wish it was different, but that's the current law, is a newborn 30 days or under.
Can you talk more about your wish?
I just think if a parent really feels like they're not capable of doing this job, that it shouldn't be criminalized, because they need someone else to take their baby, regardless of the age. Mm-hmm.
What options are there after 30 days?
I don't know if there are options.
I believe they can always surrender to the hospital or EMS if they felt unfit or they were in a crisis. So they always have that option.
Yeah.
I think that what is interesting about this is the stigma of, like, oh, everybody wants to have a child, or mm-hmm. every mother, every parent right. wants to welcome. And that's not necessarily true, in terms of, it could be wanting something better for the child that you can't give it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And that the baby box is something very positive rather than negative.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's doing the right thing for a mom. And I think that should be honored. I mean, if you can't do the job, it's okay. You know, there has to be grace in this.
Well, I don't know. I'm not a parent, but I would think that not everyone is cut out to be a parent. And certainly I recognize that in my profession of teaching. Not everyone is cut out to be a teacher, but yet they remain in the classroom. The penalty is so great for re-educating and changing a profession. You know, this is, I think, a wonderful option. And for the, not only the child, but for the community, we want a level playing field.
Yeah. And a couple of things that I've heard in regards to the safe haven law or the baby box is that, you know, for example, a woman has three kids and the fourth one she's pregnant with and he's very horribly abusive, and she can't give the baby up for adoption because he won't allow it. But she could place the baby in the box and be able to sever that relationship and keep her and her other kids safe. So it's those types of situations, you know. We always, like, people tend to judge, thinking that they understand, and, you know, or the other situation could be that there's a woman that's being trafficked. And a lot of times the traffickers will have that baby almost to hold it over her, to keep her under control. Mm-hmm. And if she can get that baby into a safe place, she can also sever that relationship and keep herself safe.
I'm curious a little bit about what that process was. You were, when did it start, and then how did it develop? You mentioned you saw a film first, and when was that?
Oh gosh, it was years ago. Probably 7 years ago.
My okay. Yeah. When and the it didn't become legal to have a baby box in the state until
July of last year.
Okay.
Yeah. July. So I was at work on it even before it was legal. I didn't. I just thought we need to check into this, and so I just was walking through the steps, seeing what the Lord would do.
Mm-hmm. It became legal, and then you approach. Who do you approach at that point?
It was Jeff Lindsay. He's the EMS chief. Yeah.
Right.
And Jeff and I, when he said yes, absolutely, he wanted to do this, then we walked ahead into contracts and negotiations.
Yeah. And there, is this the only company that, or organization, I guess, that creates these kind of boxes?
That's my understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you reached out to them, and they said, yeah.
Right. And I said, I want to purchase a box. We need to do this. And they were, they're super supportive, helpful.
Sure.
Yeah. And they were the ones, they actually are the ones that advocate for the legality of it in different states. Mm-hmm. And so they were the ones that helped it to be legal in Idaho to bring it here. So they're advocating in that way.
Hmm. Did it... Were there any real challenges or anything getting, fundraising, for example?
The fundraising was fine because, I mean, like I said, the donors from Life Choices paid for the box. That was no problem. Mm-hmm. The installation was done at no cost by Bush Legacy Builders. They installed the box and top-notch electrical. And then Tamarack Media came up with the sign. So everybody's just come alongside.
Mm-hmm.
So the big hang-up really was between the baby box company and the county coming up with an agreement. And I really did think one day, I just went, I don't think this is going to happen. I thought we were at a dead end, but they were able to work it through. And then, of course, the commissioners supported it and had to vote.
So are we all waiting for the first baby?
We are. Every morning, you know, every morning I think, okay, is today the day?
Yeah. What, I mean, I guess, what is it that makes it difficult to, once the law is in place that makes it legal, mm-hmm. what makes it so difficult to get it through kind of the, over the finish line?
Why? You mean with the county?
Yeah, with the county. Why is that, or what is that agreement? I guess, what's the agreement that's in place with the county?
Yeah, if you could imagine, in Blackfoot, the first baby that was deposited in the box was deceased.
Oh.
So you just never know the situation that the baby could be in, or that the county, you know, if somebody makes a mistake along the way, there's just a lot of liability.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think, is the biggest thing. But they were able to work it out and move ahead with it.
We're here with Janine Shepherd, Executive Director, Life Choices Pregnancy at the 7B Care Clinic, and Melissa Bond, Nurse Manager. And let's take a music break, and I'd like to learn more about the 7B Clinic. And
great.
We could talk about the clientele, the services offered, that sort of thing. On this date, if you can believe it, September 4th, 1970, the Rolling Stones released their second live album. And we're going to be playing a cut. This is a song with lots of energy. Let that second cup of coffee kick in. Here's the Rolling Stones from Get Your Ya-Ya's Out with Street Fightin' Man.
Get Your Ya-Ya's Out, released on this date, 1970, the Rolling Stones, the live version of Street Fightin' Man. You're listening to The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. We're here with Janine Shepherd and Melissa Bond from the 7B Care Clinic. And we've been talking about the new baby box that's been installed at the Bonner County EMS building on Division Street,
but 521 South.
There we go.
Division. Yep.
Division.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right near the intersection of 2 and Division is where
I was way north of that.
Yeah. Is there any signage about that besides on the building? Is there anything directing people there?
Yeah, we began to run ads before the movie, so I'm hoping that people are seeing the baby box commercial. And it has a QR code that they can scan to find locations for the baby boxes all over the country.
Hmm. You mentioned none really further west of us.
Correct.
We're the first in the Pacific Northwest.
Yep.
The baby box is a place where a new parent who's not prepared to be a parent can drop off a newborn and doesn't actually have to hand it to a person, can put the baby in the box, and the baby will be cared for immediately or within 2 minutes.
Yeah, complete anonymity.
Yeah, nobody's or that building, the EMS building, that's not staffed all the time.
It is.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if by chance they were out on a call,
sure,
then somebody else would pick it up.
Then the police might kick in.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so would it be? Is the normal scenario is maybe just somebody who's already inside the building can go get it.
Still,
doesn't have to be a sprint across town to get it.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I think earlier Janine said within 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They require it to be under 5, and the testing was around 2 minutes.
Yeah. Well, we want to talk about the 7B Care Clinic and what you guys do there. Anything more about the baby box? I guess the story of anything further to flesh out there? Not really.
No, I don't.
We told it.
If one wants more information, where does one go?
Yeah, you can go there. The website for the baby box company is shbb.org. And that's the safe haven. And that's where this is a really cool thing about what they do. And I didn't mention this. So the baby box people actually support women in the process. So they have a hotline, and the hotline, you'll see it if you go to the box on Division 2. Mm-hmm. But the hotline allows a woman or a man to call before, during, and after the surrender. And so they're, I mean, they offer counseling, they offer all kinds of things to help the people through this process. So you could imagine beforehand, the woman could talk through what the surrender might look like. And during and after, she can also be calling to get support. So super important.
SHBB.org.
Yep.
Okay. Go there for more information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. The 7B Care Clinic is what? What do you guys, what is the 7B Care
Clinic? So we're a pregnancy resource center, and we're at 35 Lighthouse Drive. We have appointments Monday through Thursday, and then and you can call 208-263-7621. That's 208-263-7621, and schedule an appointment, or go to the website at www.7bcareclinic.org to find out more information. But
and where is Lighthouse Drive?
It's off of McGee, so off of Highway 200.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Off of Highway 200.
This would be out in the old Lighthouse Complex.
It's in the Lighthouse Complex, yeah.
Sure. Ah, okay, okay.
Yeah, almost into Kootenai.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
So we have an office, a medical office there, and I wanted to have Melissa talk about what we do medically.
Perfect. Yes.
Thanks for having me. I'm Melissa Bond, and I'm the registered nurse manager at 7B Care Clinic. And I have the privilege of working alongside of our faithful medical director, Dr. Guyman. And so basically what we do is we do medical grade pregnancy tests, and then we roll into ultrasound, which is really important. When women come in, just because we are in this OB desert, we no longer have OB services, labor and delivery services, at Bonner General Hospital. So we technically are in this OB desert where women need care and often need to launch their pregnancy. And they come in wanting to carry, desiring to parent. They come in not sure. They're not sure if they have the tools and resources, so they're ambiguous about the pregnancy. And so what we can provide for them is education and truth. The pregnancy test first, and then when we roll them into the ultrasound, we're looking for three things. We're confirming intrauterine pregnancy, viability, and estimated gestational age and due date. And then if they're desiring care, we're referring them to OBGYNs in Coeur d'Alene, Libby, Montana, also Bonner's Ferry, and then there's midwives in the area as well.
Okay, when you say 7B Care Clinic, do you mean really 7B, the county itself? Can anybody from outside the like boundary or something?
Absolutely.
Okay, yes. So it's just not.
We serve the whole community, whether or not they're within our county.
Can you give the listeners an idea of how busy you are? How many at any one time do you have clients?
Yes. It ebbs and flows. We provide ongoing services for our clients. We walk alongside of them, although we can't provide prenatal care, but we help with classes.
You know, what would be prenatal care? You know, I'm sort of ignorant about this. You know,
yes.
We cannot provide prenatal care.
Yes.
Help me with that.
Okay. So there's antepartum care. When women are pregnant from first, second, and third trimester, they need care throughout the pregnancy. So what that includes is seeing usually an OBGYN. They get labs drawn. They have ultrasounds periodically. They're monitoring mom for any issues that may come along during the pregnancy, monitoring the baby for adequate and appropriate growth. So it's just having that ongoing prenatal care. Those usually in the first trimester, till second trimester, they usually are seen every 4 weeks. And then from 28 weeks to 36 weeks of pregnancy, they're seen every 2 weeks. And then that last month of pregnancy, they're seen weekly for monitoring.
So we're basically launching the pregnancies. At this point, we're not giving ongoing care.
Yes.
Though we are working on that, hopefully in the future.
In the future. The person goes down to Coeur d'Alene, unless one has a midwife here in Bonner County.
Yes.
Then do you pick up services after the baby has been delivered or?
Yes. So we're not picking up medical services, but once we launch their pregnancy, they're referred to prenatal care, then we can walk alongside of them with other resources. Maybe they want to take Bright Course classes. These are mostly evidence-based classes that our coaches can walk alongside of them with, and they can continue to take those remotely or in the office. We also have a boutique. Clients can come in and shop our store free of charge. All of our services are free and confidential.
Okay. And one more time, location?
35 Lighthouse Drive.
Okay. And do you have a website?
We do. Yep, www.7bcareclinic.org.
Okay, and hours? 5 days a week?
4 days a week.
Four days.
So Mondays and Tuesdays from 12 to 4, and Wednesdays and Thursdays from 10 to 2.
Okay, and how large is the clinic in terms of staff?
So there's 7 of us on staff.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we have coaches. So a lot of what we do is really in support of the moms and dads. So we, along with the classes, just walk alongside, find out what their fears and concerns are, what their biggest needs are, and that type of thing. So, you know, especially if you're unexpectedly pregnant, it's important to feel supported. And the number one reason that women have abortions is because they feel unsupported. Mm-hmm. So we're just really trying to come alongside and support them in any way that we can. And we also have a program for fathers. So we have male coaches.
Oh, what a concept.
Yeah. We have male coaches on hand, too, to meet with the clients each day and just to offer that same kind of support. What are his fears and concerns? Mm-hmm. What is he needing support in the pregnancy, because what we're hoping for is strong families
and happy babies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't want women to just have babies. We want families to thrive.
A community. How long has 7B Care Clinic been in existence?
So Life Choices has been in existence, as far as I can tell, since 1985.
Okay.
But the clinic we rebranded to help be more welcoming to anybody. Whether they're deciding to carry or considering abortion. So the 7B Care Clinic just helps us to be a little bit more generic and welcoming to everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's been, I think 3 years.
3 years.
Yeah.
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 And have the numbers of clients over the years grown?
Oh, yeah. We're crazy busy. It's really wonderful to be able to support so many people in the community.
Yes.
Were you guys both involved before we lost OB services at Hunter General?
Yes.
Yeah. You're both or at least in the community.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. I was working at Sandpoint Women's Health for 18 years. And then I was working at Life Choices Pregnancy Center and Sandpoint Women's Health for a couple years before I rolled over into the nurse manager position at 7B Care Clinic.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Can you speak at all to, I guess, what changes you've seen since now that there is no longer OB services here in Sandpoint?
Yeah, I feel like women have this new vulnerability that they had not anticipated. So I think that's where we're filling that gap and meeting their needs where they're at. The nice thing is there's additional resources coming about. We have people that are willing to transport clients down to their OB appointments in Coeur d'Alene in case they share a car with their spouse. I mean, there's a lot of stressors that can come about not knowing that your OB services are here in Sandpoint. We do have an OBGYN in Coeur d'Alene. They have a midwife that comes to town once a week to see their OB patients, which offsets that stress of having to drive down to Coeur d'Alene.
So it sounds like a lot of networking, you know, like I think what Janine said earlier, you're not alone.
Right.
And it's connecting and you can do referrals and all sorts of support that otherwise, if you're on your own, it becomes extremely difficult.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's really neat to see the transformation in people as we're able to encourage them and give them the resources that they need, and they find hope in that they're able to do this. They're able to carry the baby.
Okay, yes. We're winding down. Anything? Well, I do know Melissa does have something to say to someone on this date of September the 4th. It's all yours.
All right. I want to shout out to my son, writer Wesley Bond. Happy birthday. Happy 19th birthday. Such a blessing to be your mom, buddy. I hope you have a great day.
Oh, 19. I imagine that those years have whoosh.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Time is a thief.
It is. But it also rewards.
It is. Yeah. So thankful.
Melissa and Janine, anything in conclusion with the Safe Haven Baby Box, maybe location, and same thing with 7B Care Clinic, you know, contact where one can get information.
Yeah. So we're always looking we're going to need to market this box for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So donations, if you want to go to lifechoicespc.org. and give towards marketing to help get the word out about the baby box. That would be great. And the baby box is at 521 South Division in Sandpoint. And our office is at 35 Lighthouse Drive in Sandpoint. And we're just grateful to be able to be of service to the community.
Well, to echo, I'm just looking at the article from the August 6th Bonner Bee, and the person who is the main force behind the creation of the baby box. She says, if each of us told five people about the box, that would be super helpful. Tell people about this project and about what it is that we're doing here.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, that I think Jack and I have discovered over the years interviewing people that we get responses from listeners. I didn't know about that. The word going. And thank you so much for all the good work you're doing in the community and supporting so many different people in so many different ways.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
You bet. And anytime that you want to be back in touch with getting on the air, just let us know, and we'll, in enough time, you know, that we'll have you back on the air.
All right. And we'll just pray that that baby comes in. Yes. Every day.
Yes.
Let us know. We want to hear
about that. Oh, everybody will hear. Yeah,
definitely. Thank you again, Janine and Melissa. We're going to play another song here on this date in 1967. A group called The Doors released this single.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name.
That was The Doors on this date, September 4th, 1967. That song was released, Jim Morrison, and I like that song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's sort of like easy on the ears.
It's, yeah, and it's not the kind of, it's a little bit of a novelty song.
Yes.
I don't know, how was that a big hit for them? I've heard it many times.
Let me see. It peaked at number 12 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart.
Well, and I was just going to say, I think, you know, it seems like the days of that kind of music actually having a popular breakthrough where it's kind of, just a little bit off kilter. I was going to say that those are over, but I think currently isn't the... this year, Jack Black was at number one on the popular music charts.
Oh, go away. That's a flashback.
With a silly song from the...
I'm sure he appreciates that.
Yeah. I believe he does, actually. I think it's intentionally, yes.
Silly song. Jack Black.
Yeah. I don't know. I have to look that up. What that was, I think something from the Minecraft movie. And I think it's like the shortest song ever to hit number one on the... So you have to update your trivia now. It's no longer...
Stay by Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs.
Yeah.
No kidding.
I believe so.
That bit of trivia has been with me since early 60s. And if I'm going to have to, that's asking a lot, Jack, to update my trivia knowledge.
Let's see. Yeah, it's called Steve's Lava Chicken. Let's see. A 34-second song made it to the Billboard Hot 100. I guess maybe not.
Steve's perhaps. Lava Hot Chicken?
Steve's Lava Chicken.
Oh, Lava Let's Chicken, see. Not Hot Chicken.
Yeah. It made it. It hit the Hot 100. I'm gonna see if it. Let's see. It is 34 seconds long. It broke several records, particularly in the United States and the United Kingdom, as the shortest song to chart on the Billboard Hot 100 and the UK Singles Chart, respectively. So it did not hit number one.
Okay, okay. I can live with that.
I think so, too.
I think Maurice Williams right. Stay did, but I could be also wrong that.
I believe you're, I think you're correct.
I could be wrong all over the place.
Oh, well.
Oh, dear.
We've got some...
upcoming events this weekend.
We do. For one thing, this ties into something going on the radio station next week, but I will just read this press release we got from the Pondere Arts Council, as well as Maddox Farms Productions. They are up for a big grant from the Levitt Music, it's a Levitt Music Series grant from the Levitt Foundation. They are up for it. They have not been awarded the grant, at least not yet. It could be up to $120,000.
That's a chunk of change.
It is. They are, POAC is vying to become a finalist to receive the Levitt Music Series grant. The public gets to vote on this, and that's why it's so important.
So what would the money for the grant be used for?
For the summer music series that POAC has sponsored with Maddox Farms Productions in Farman Park. They do one show a month, four shows a year in Farman Park for the for free for the community.
Okay.
This would alleviate some of their allows costs. Them to keep it to keep it coming for free.
How does one vote? How does one go about that?
Well, let's see. It's September 4th right now. This will be starting tomorrow, September 5th at 10 a.m. You can vote online or via text. September 5th through September 15th opens at 10 a.m. on the 5th and closes on September 15th at 5 p.m. levitt.org/vote. That's levitt.org.
Is this a nationwide thingy?
It is.
Okay.
I know. So one wonders, how are we going to, is little old Sandpoint going to get the votes that it needs compared to some of the other
Can the we other have a robo-voter?
Yeah. Let's see. Supported by the Levitt Foundation, the opportunity could provide up to $120,000 over 3 years. This would be for funding the 2026 through 2028 series. This would fund a series of 7 to 10 free outdoor concerts annually, so they'd be increasing their numbers.
The numbers, if it's awarded. Yes, definitely.
It would allow them to expand on Sandpoint's summer music series, a cherished community tradition for the past 6 years. POAC has submitted a proposal to enhance and grow the current summer music series by hosting additional free outdoor concerts at Farman Park, located in downtown Sandpoint. The proposed series will feature a diverse lineup of professional musicians across multiple genres, activating an underutilized public space and creating a vibrant, inclusive destination for residents and visitors alike. There you are. You can read the proposal on the Levitt Foundation website, which I gave you before, levitt.org.
Anything on POAC's website?
I would bet you there's a link from POAC's
website. There's got to be. Sure. There's got to be.
Yeah. You can also text 877-409-5525. And you text the keyword Sandpoint to that number.
Cool.
877-409-5525. Each individual can vote once for up to 5 proposals, either online or via text. How about that?
Okay.
So I guess you're supposed to go look at the proposals and then obviously vote for the best one, which is Sandpoint. but other people will get to look
too. Don't look at the other proposals. Yeah. Just go straight to Sandpoint. Hey. And we'll bring this up again next week, the 11th, on the Thursday morning show, if we can keep that piece of paper.
Yes. I'll keep the piece of paper right here, and I will say we have lined up for Tuesday, September 9th, next Tuesday, so during the voting, Rob and Tone and I think Dino from the...
Poeck and Maddox.
From Poeck and Maddox will be coming in to actually give you the details on...
So that's Tuesday morning edition, Tuesday edition of the morning show on the 9th.
That's right.
8 o'clock.
With guess who? Phil Huff.
Phil is back.
He's returned from his sojourn to the East Coast.
Phil, yes. Phil Huff is back from hoofing it.
Yeah. I've seen him in the hallway. It's true.
He lives. He yes, lives. I've seen Welcome him here back, in person. Phil. We've missed you.
Yeah. I hope we get his story. Next time there's an actual, just a gap in the morning show schedule, we should ask him what he got up to. Were you following along at all? Did you see his photos?
I was. His photos are incredible. Yeah. Before we exit, I do want to, and you were there, give a shout out to the Panada Theater and Viggo Mortensen for the fundraiser for both KRFY and the Panada Theater with a showing of Falling.
That's right.
And a good turnout. And appreciate... not only Vigo's efforts, but also the members of the community who supported the fundraiser.
Yeah. Thanks for coming, everybody who did. And we hope we can have another chance to offer that kind of thing again. It was a sellout, as it seems like it always is when he comes to town to present one of his movies. Let's see. Coming up on KRFY on Monday, we have a rerun of our Community Character Hour that... came out at the end of last month. They were talking about the Trail to Gold. Basically, before the railroads were here, what was here? That's right, kind of the period of time we're exploring what brought people to the area. And it was not gold specifically in this area. There was a little bit, but it was mostly people heading up to British Columbia, the gold fields there, heading out to Montana, the gold and silver that they found there. They had to pass through Sandpoint, and you had to get across the Pendere River somewhere, and they did it just down the river from us. Not actually Sandpoint, but over by Laclede, a no longer extant community called Seneaquitine was the point where they crossed.
Interesting.
It is, yeah. That's a good show that you should tune into if you haven't heard it on Monday, September 8th. Poeck and Maddox Farms on Tuesday, September 9th. On Wednesday.
What time on Monday night?
That's on Monday morning.
Monday morning. Oh, Monday morning a.m. I'm sorry. I'm in another universe.
That's okay, Jim. Poeck and Maddox Farms on Tuesday. Ryan Wells and Jason Welker coming in from the city of Sandpoint to talk about what's changing at the James Russell Sports Center operations on Wednesday. And I think right now we are talking about having a Sandemonium come in next Thursday.
We need to hear from those folks.
That's right.
That wasn't them.
That wasn't them. And I do have the festival at Sandpoint wants to come in and talk to us too. So I said 8:45.
Everybody wants to talk to us.
So you'll hear from the festival a little recap at 8:45 a.m. on next Thursday, and then news of the week tomorrow and on next Friday and every Friday after that.
We need to exit off the air because the bird note folks
are
getting edgy.
This is 88.5 KRFY Pendere. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Jack.
Okay, here's bird note. And then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long after that.